A Playlist Original.
Hello and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 10 of the Breakfast Book Club. I'm Emily and this week I'm joined by Caroline Khoury to discuss her new book, It Must Be Love. Caroline's an incredible guest. She's been listening to the podcast since it begun and I'm just so excited to have her on. Her most important book's actually inspired by the podcast, so that was lovely as well. This is actually the final episode of Season 2. I didn't know that whilst recording. I just thought 10 was a nice number to end the season on. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. If you have any feedback, please let me know because I would love to hear your thoughts and change things up a little bit for Season 3. So whatever you like or don't like, I would love to know. I'll stop going on now. I hope you enjoy this episode and yeah, thanks for listening. Hi, Caroline. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Emily. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Oh, no, it's my honour. I'm going to lay claim to being your biggest fan. I've listened to the podcast since you started it last February, and it really was the highlight of my Monday evenings while I was cooking tea for the kids. Oh,
thank you. That's so kind. I'm so excited to have you on because I feel like months and months ago, I was like, oh, when your book comes out, we'll record an episode. And I was like, right, okay. And then one thing or another got delayed, but now your book is out in ebook already and paperback February 3rd. Yeah. How are you feeling?
Oh, delirious. I got a massive box yesterday and I don't know, my publishers keep doing this. They just surprise me. And just to see that Penguin Random House on the front, it was just so ridiculously thrilling. And I did a reel and I mean, it was just one take. So I really couldn't, like, it was like that, that was it. It just came from the heart and it just was so emotional. Just to see 20 copies of my book, it was just, it was unreal. So
it was emotional to watch. I seen the reel yesterday and I seen a lot of people commenting as well, being like, oh, like, this is so emotional.
Yeah, I mean, there's a caveat. I didn't take 7 years to write that book that's coming out. I mean, I think my agent might kill me for saying that, but that sort of really represents the time since I actually decided, you know what, I'm going to write a book. And that first book was, you know, pretty amazing. It got a lot of interest. I just learned a phenomenal amount from doing it, you know, just from talking to other authors, getting feedback on it. I just knew I had to grow and learn a lot. And then I just had an inspiration to just write the second one. And yeah, then the rest is history. So that's where the emotion came from.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched the reel, go and find it on Caroline's page, because especially if you're like an aspiring author, I think it's a really good reel to look at and go, well, this is the end goal.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's obviously a dream. You know, I'm not going to lie, there were some real low points during the journey and times when I really thought, you know what, this is just not going to happen. I credit a lot of friends in the acknowledgements, people that just like picked me up, told me to keep going, you know, move on from that first book. I think that's a key thing for new aspiring writers. There just sometimes comes a time when you just got to say, this isn't the one, and you got to move on. And if you really, really want to do it, if you really want to be a writer, you've just got to keep going, keep practicing, keep sharing, and you never know what might happen.
Well, there's a great bit of advice.
Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox now.
No, that's great. What are you currently reading?
Oh, I love this question. Every time you do it on the podcast, I always like say it out loud as if I'm doing an Oscar speech. So currently I'm reading. the trouble is I'm such a mood reader. In fact, I sometimes call myself a terrible reader. I tend to have several books on the go, depending on my mood. I'll quite often buy a lot of books, read the first two chapters, and no disrespect to the authors, I'll just say in my mind, okay, I'm going to read that when I'm in this particular mood. And then I'll return to my bookcase and go, yeah, I'm in the mood. I want someone to make me laugh. So then I'll know what to pick up. Sorry, that's a long way of saying I'm currently reading Confessions of a 40-something F #K up. So F up by Alexandra Potter. Now I got this, I got a lovely Waterstones gift card for my last birthday. And so I went into Waterstones and thought, I'm going to treat myself to a hardback because they're expensive and I see them as a luxury. So I saw this. First of all, the colour is mint, which is just insanely beautiful. And it just spoke to me. I mean, never has a jacket cover just spoken to me. Hashtag no idea what I'm doing. Yep, I definitely feel that. And I'm pretty much starting again in my 40s. So I kind of knew I had to read it. And it's just hilarious. So I actually, sorry, about the mood reading, I started reading it before Christmas. And then I got waylaid with structural edits. And then I got commissioned to do a short story, which was phenomenally exciting. So often I tend to struggle reading when I'm writing. And it's not because of imposter syndrome. It's just because the characters that I'm imagining just take over my brain and I just don't have the capacity to read. But I've just picked this up again. And it's just hilarious. It really is. It's just speaking to me. And I don't, do you know it? Have you?
So I've seen it and it's something that sort of like piqued my interest. But I feel like I wouldn't really take too much from it at this point, being 26. But I've seen other people who are like a similar age to me read it and just say they love it. It's funny. So it's not one that I'm rushing out to buy.
No, I can see that. Yeah. I mean, obviously it spoke to me, but, and some of the bits she, especially when she talks about the online dating. Yeah. That kind of speaking to me at the moment. But I don't think it matters kind of what age you are. I just think it's funny. And the way I actually thought, I love it when a book does this. I thought it was a memoir. So I actually had to look up the author and go, oh, wait, this isn't her life story.
I thought it was nonfiction. Yeah. So that's also put me off a little bit. But is it, it's fiction?
No, it is. And actually, I think she's written a whole load of rom-coms and she's passed me by. So, you know, might have to go and pick up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's moved it up my list a bit because memoirs aren't really my forte. I have to really be in the mood for it.
Yeah. But so it's not fiction, a memoir at all. It's completely fiction. You see, you thought it as well. I think they should have put some, but no, it's quite obvious when you read inside the jacket cover that it's not about her. But it's what makes me laugh is, you know how always the new year you think about getting these journals where you start writing, you know, today I'm happy about, I'm grateful for, and then it lasts about a week. But she does this in the whole book. So it's like a diary of the whole year, and every month or every chapter is like, I'm grateful for. But it's just so tongue in cheek and she's just taking the piss and it's hilarious. So
I'm going to actually look into that.
Well, I don't write rom-coms, although actually my publishing house, I think, might have classified mine as a rom-com, but I just don't generally, if someone finds what I write funny, that's great, but I don't particularly set out to be funny. But when someone does make me laugh in a book, I think that's just genius because I think it's so hard to do.
So difficult. Like, I had Abigail Mann on a few episodes ago and she writes funny books. And I was like, how do you do it? And she was like, I just write what makes me laugh. I was like, well, yeah, then there's going to be somebody else out there who's also laughing.
Exactly. What are you reading at the moment?
So I am currently the same as you. I'm a mood reader. So it's called The Tourist Attraction by Sarah Morgenthaler. And I don't think it has a UK publisher. So it's released in America, and when I post it online, like, Americans are like, oh, I've just bought this in Target.
Target. I miss Target.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, I want to go boot shopping in Target.
Oh, is this with that gift card you got that you didn't know was a US one?
Yeah. So this is that. This is what I ended up purchasing. And it's a nice, easy rom-com set in Alaska. Cliche, you know exactly how it's going to end. But I've recently finished Acts of Desperation, which was quite dark. So I needed just sort of nice and easy that I can just pick up in the morning and not be like, oh, it's a lot.
I honestly don't know how you do it. I don't do dark. I'm sorry. I can't do dark anymore.
I very rarely read dark books. So My Dark Vanessa was one I read last year and I was like, this is not, because I think you get into the headspace of the characters that you're reading.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, not for me. But this Acts of Desperation I enjoyed much more.
Yeah.
But I still need some light to like rebound from it.
Oh, this Alaska one sounds quite interesting. Oh, sounds like a Netflix movie.
It is. It's like a cheesy Hallmark movie that you just put on a Sunday and go, yeah, that's nice.
Perfect.
Yeah. So the general hook of the podcast is your most important read. What would you say is your most important read?
Oh, Emily, I have you to thank for this. I don't know where to start. It's The Heart's Visible Furies by John Boyne. What do I say about that book?
That's the problem with this book. I feel like this is, a lot of people go, oh, I haven't heard of that. And I'm like, how? And then I think, oh, because there's no way to sum it up. It's just too good.
Yeah.
No one's talking about it and because there aren't the words.
I know. And God, when you kept mentioning it at the beginning of the podcast, I was like, okay, but I don't know what it's about. I mean, that's like, I don't know if I should read it. And then I don't know how to introduce this one. Well, what happened was it was in the summer. I'd gone through quite a massive change in my personal life. And I found myself with 5 days free without the kids. And it was the first time in, God, 13 years. And I just felt so lost. And I think it was some friends of mine said, just go and buy some books. And we all know bookstores are like comfort zones for so many of us. So I wandered into my local Waterstones, the one in Kingston, which is just, it's absolutely brilliant. It's absolutely massive. And I don't know, I was just wandering around aimlessly. And then I thought of you. I don't know why, but I just did. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to go and see what the hell she's talking about. And I picked it up and I just very nearly put it back. I was like, is she out of her mind? It's 700 pages. And I've literally, because my mum always called me a terrible reader, which I think is actually grossly unfair because I was obsessed with Sweet Valley High. But, you know, I guess there's a lot of snobbery around books like that. So it's always been a challenge of mine to like read a big book, but as long as it's a book that I'm just not going to get too bogged down with. And then in the middle of Waterstones, I started reading it. And then I didn't realize I was 30 pages in and I'd been standing there, like my arms started to ache. And I read the whole thing in 5 days. I've never, ever, ever done that. And I just can't do the book justice. I mean, what, growing up gay in Ireland? I mean, that's just not enough, really. The characterization is just phenomenal. Have you read the bit at the back of the note from the author?
I don't think so. I can't remember.
Seriously, drop everything. Because I hadn't on the first read through. And I mean, he just basically writes why he wrote it. And, you know, this is towards what, 10 books in for him. Parts of it a bit autobiographical, and then just talking about his obsessions that he had with Morton Harkett from Aha and Jason Donovan, it cracked me up. And I think he didn't set out to like write it for it to be funny. And I think I think everyone that reads it will take away something different from it. You know, you can say, yes, it's educational, it's poignant, it will make you cry. And my God, did it make me cry. But it also is a hug of a book, and I was just laughing my head off. Underlined so many lines. It was, it's incredible.
It's like there'll be chapters and they're so incredibly dark, and then just a tone of phrase that one of the characters uses, you're just back to laughing your head off. And I'm like, that's the balance. That's just what makes it so special.
Yeah, I actually, if you don't mind, I wrote a quote because it just spoke to me. It's, do you enjoy being a writer, Mrs. Avery, asked Julian. No, of course not, she said. It's a hideous profession, entered into by narcissists who think their pathetic little imaginations will be of interest to people they've never met. And I just pissed myself. I mean, Mrs. Avery, Maud, there's just so many characters. And yeah. So.
I actually read The Echo Chamber by John Boyne, which
I have that.
Yeah,
I can't wait to read that.
Maud gets like a nice little mention in it briefly, but it's the same sort of humour, but it's reflecting on 2020 and social media and trolling and Twitter and people being able to say whatever they want online. And I didn't think I wanted to read any books about like 2020 or COVID. Like, it's like a bit too soon. We're still living in it. But I thought if anybody can do it, it's John Boyne.
Oh God, I can't wait. And now.
It's incredible.
I'm saving that. You know, I read a couple of chapters of that again, like I told you, the mood reading. And I was just laughing again, my head off. I was in the cafe. There's a cafe attached to my Waterstones. And I was like, oh my God, I am saving this one. I am so saving this one. But I don't know about you. What I loved about this book is how it's split. It's almost like mini books because it's like chapters of his life. And definitely I'd say the last third gave me masses of It's a Sin vibes. And I don't know if you saw that, but it was without doubt the best thing I watched last year. I just...
Oh, 100%.
What a show. So, what a show. Again, no words for that show. Seriously.
It's one of those shows that you could watch again because it's just so brilliant.
Oh, but it's just
too devastating.
It was, that's the word, isn't it? And the ugly tears were so ugly. Like, no words.
No, I think we're both just sat here speechless.
Yeah. just watch it.
So what would you say is your most anticipated book for this year?
Oh, well, I've made a lot of lovely author friends online, never met them, but I'm definitely going to be looking forward to Emma Hughes's new release, Lorraine Brown. I'm getting a proof soon of Emma Lloyd Cowell's book. We share the same agent. I'm a massive fan of Isabel Broom as well. But I think there's one book in particular. I actually really, again, I just don't even know what it's about, but I just know I'll just inhale it. It's the new one by Rosie Walsh, which is, I think, it's called The Love of My Life. Do you know that one?
So I've just started listening to the audiobook of The Man Who Never Called.
The Man Who Didn't Call. Oh my God.
The Man Who Didn't Call.
Yeah.
So I've just started listening to that on as an audiobook and I'm loving it. I've had it on the shelf for a while and I don't know why I haven't picked it up.
Emily, so late in the day. No.
I know.
Because I inhaled that one. I have this theory, like, you either inhale, devour, or savour. So for me, if you inhale a book, it's literally, I tell the kids, I'm sorry, go make your own dinner. You know, literally don't bother me at all. I just want to inhale it. I think devour, I'd say you'd probably do that over a few days because you know you're enjoying it, but you've got to actually get on with your life. But savour, I think you just, like maybe with John Boyne sometimes, you just know you can pick it up again and it's going to be okay. And you're still loving it, but you just want to savor it. But Rosie Walsh is that The Man Who Didn't Call. That came out, I think, in 2018. And I stumbled upon it, really didn't know what it was about. Just inhaled it. I was like, wow, what a writer. And then she's had this, I don't know why, but she's had a long gap. I think she had a kid, which of course does tend to.
Yeah.
I was about to say ruin things. That's, sorry, kids. I do love you. It does not ruin, it just changes your priorities and also you're sleep deprived. But I think there was that and obviously the pandemic. But yeah, The Love of My Life, I just, can't wait. So that's out in June, I think.
Well, I'm excited for that. I haven't even finished this one yet, but I'm excited for that one now.
Yeah, no pressure, Emily, to like that. Sorry.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not with audio, but I don't tend to listen, I'm afraid, to audiobooks. And I don't know why.
You know, I never did. And then once I started working after I finished university, I was like, I have no time to like read as much as I was because I had all this free time. So now I'll just like, when I'm doing chores or walking the dog, just stick an audiobook on just to get a few chapters in, because I feel like if I don't read, I always say to my boyfriend, I feel a bit discombobulated. I haven't read today. Yeah. I just don't feel myself. So at least this way, if I'm too busy, there's an excuse to do the dishes.
Maybe I should make more of an effort. Yeah, well, it's like listening to your podcast. It's just, I mean, no, I should do that more. Someone said to me, actually, you can speed things up, because often I get impatient if it's slow. I didn't know you could speed things up.
Yeah, that put me off as well. I always have it on at least like 1.25. Just because... I speak quite fast, so other people, obviously, when they read audiobooks, talk slow so you can understand. I'm like, no,
yeah,
we need to speed this up.
I And also there's a lot about, you know, how you in your head imagine the person speaking. And I think if it doesn't quite match, then I don't know. And I think it's a goal for this year.
That's something I'd never considered either. And then I started listening to Hamney, which mm-hmm. everybody had raved about. And it was such a modern voice. Mm. I was like, this just doesn't sit right.
Yeah.
So I didn't end up finishing it because I just couldn't.
Well, there you
put
go.
The two and two together.
Then it's game over, and that seems unfair, doesn't it, to the book? But
yeah. So my most anticipated release for this year is your book, although I have already read it because I was very lucky to get a proof. But tell us a little bit about your book because you know it best.
Yeah, sure. Okay, It Must Be Love. It's a story about Abby and Oz, who first meet as students at a peace rally in London. There's definitely a connection between them and a lot of chemistry. But after one day together, Oz goes home to Istanbul and life moves on. And then almost 15 years later, Abby's with the man she thinks she's going to spend the rest of her life with until a chance meeting with Oz again. But this isn't a second chance encounter because it's not the first time they've seen each other since that first time. The book starts in the present day with lots of flashbacks to the past, and it kind of slowly unravels their intense love story from London to Istanbul, Beirut to Paris. And basically Abby and Oz are just star-crossed lovers who never quite meet at the right time or the right place. And I'd kind of say it will call into question whether you do believe in fate or destiny. I'm not trying to convert you, but I've managed to convert a few people.
I loved in the book where there was like that differentiation between fate and destiny.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which way around it is now, but
yeah, I know. don't ask.
One is that it just happens, and one is that you have to work. You work to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's because of my Middle Eastern background. And there's definitely this feeling, and if you're Turkish, that you actually believe in is kader. I probably butchered the word, but it means destiny. And that's definitely what they believe in. So there's basically an element of choice in destiny. So, maybe without realizing it, you do make these choices. And that's why it happens. If fate is that kind of, well, it's going to happen, whatever. But it's something that definitely interested me, just having that, because I'm, obviously half Welsh, half Lebanese. So maybe the Welsh in me might be a bit more, oh, can't happen. If it is, it's fate. But this more romantic side of me, which I, think that Middle Eastern part of me is definitely, I believe in destiny.
I loved how many different locations and how vibrant the locations were in the book. It was like a little mini holiday. Just so gorgeous.
Yeah, in the book there's never many chapters in each place, but yes, it does. It moves around a lot. And that's definitely going to be a hallmark, I think, probably I think my editor's noticed that. She's always saying, because she just saw the short story I did, and she's like, my God, more international locations. I'm like, yep, I'm never going to stop. Because in my mind, I could just travel anywhere. So, but obviously a lot of these places I have been to, so that's good. But
that was one of my questions, actually, like how much research had to go into these locations, or how much did you just know from visiting them?
Well, like Abby, I guess I was probably early 20s when I last went to Beirut. I mean, it's a shame I haven't been, it's partly because I've been traveling the world, which I'm very privileged to have been able to do and live abroad. But yeah, I haven't been back to see family in Beirut for years and years now. But those, her sort of reflections of what she sees when she's visiting Beirut and Damascus, it's definitely what I felt when I was visiting those places as a 20-something. Paris, obviously, I'm lucky enough to have been there more recently. Istanbul, gosh, I haven't been to Turkey again since my late teens. And, COVID's obviously put a stop to all that. But I've never really believe that that's going to stop me from writing about places. I mean, I can use my imagination, and obviously Google helps.
Google Earth.
Yeah, Google Earth, Google Maps. I imagine myself walking around the streets, and but emotions and feelings, that's definitely come from, maybe that's what I felt when I visited those places.
Yeah, I think that does come across in the book.
Good. I'm glad.
So I'm just... Oh, so we sort of touched on my next question, which was about your 7 years in the making. But then I've put question mark next book, because I seen on Instagram you were working on some structural edits. Was that for the short story, or are you working on something else?
No, I'm really, really actually excited about book two. I was very, very lucky that I got a two book deal. And I just feel like this one has come in a completely different way, because obviously I think I just started writing It Must Be Love, and then went back to think, so what's it about? Which is actually really hard, because I think a lot of successful authors do, obviously, you know, it comes from that massive, incredible hook that you just think, wow, can't put it down. So when it came to pitch It Must Be Love to publishers, my agent said, well, can you come up with something for book two, please? So I was like, oh God, really? All right. So that literally was like a one paragraph. It was like a pitch, like an elevator pitch with no real story behind it. And then, yeah, they went, yeah, that actually sounds really great. So the beginning of last year, to be honest, don't know where it came from, but I just sat down and wrote book two. And then actually I lost the editor that had originally bought the two books, so there was a bit of an interim period, and then my amazing new editor came on board, so this was my first chance to actually work with her, which was terribly exciting but also nerve-wracking. And yeah, so I decided actually to deliver the book early. I think a part of me really wanted to get it done, because I just wanted to enjoy this time. I've seen a lot of authors when they get close to the sort of whole debut buzz, you know, they just don't have time to enjoy it because they're so busy, you know, working to deadline on book two. So I was really keen to just sort of get it out there. But what I wasn't expecting was that actually she really loved it. So I've been on a bit of a high like the last month. So she gave me structural edits, and you know, they're just going to be a lot of fun. So because I actually really enjoyed maybe famous last words, but no, I do enjoy the editing side of things. I think writing a first draft is just, it's hideous, and you've just got to keep going and just remember that no one will ever read it, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And the magic happens in the editing. So yeah, she's given me some really lovely sensitive edits. So yeah. And then the short story, I don't know again where that came from, but it just did. But I have to send that off to the magazine and hope they like it. So yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Is it, I don't know how it actually works, but so when your editor left, yeah, is there like a period where you go, if this new editor isn't the direction she wants to go, she won't want book two? Is there like that scary middle ground, or are you like, you've got your book deal, that's it?
I've got the book deal, that's it. But it's very much a case of, I mean, it's lovely that she loves It Must Be Love, but she didn't get the chance to sort of be involved in the editorial process. So, I mean, she's been an absolute superstar to enjoy it and kind of run with it. But with this one, it was very much a case of, do you know what? I really want to work on this with you together. So partly I gave us as a team that extra time to work on it, so that it could be a collaborative approach. I was really keen for that because, I mean, editors are, they're superstars. They see things that, you know, authors don't. They're very insightful. I mean, they just know what they're doing. So I'm just lapping it all up, really. So yeah, this is very much then our book. And she'd already seen the synopsis, so she kind of had a fair idea of what it was going to be about. But I guess it was all still a surprise to her. So yeah, I guess I'm just very lucky.
I also wrote a little note about, so I had this thought a few weeks ago, and it was when you announced your like book cover, and Bookstagram just went crazy. Like everybody was just so excited for it. And I was like, at first I thought, oh, Caroline's like, she's done this. Like I work in marketing, so I'm like, you know, she's got into Bookstagram, she's made the connections, and now everyone like, there's all this organic excitement because she's put in the groundwork. And I was like, Imagine if Caroline's just been duping us this whole time. Like, this is all a big marketing ploy.
Oh, you're so cynical.
Well,
do you know
obviously
what?
I know that's not true, but then I was like, God, yeah. That would be a really good marketing tactic for authors. Like, someone should tell them.
I'll tell you what it is. It's going to come on later, probably, when you ask me one of the other questions. But I don't know. I adore this corner of social media. I think I'd felt lost for so, so long. I've never been a fan. I don't know if I should name the other platforms, really, because I don't want to, you know. But just generally, I find some of the other platforms so judgmental, so depressing. So many, I don't know, you'll write something and there'll be haters and they'll just, I don't know. I'm not good at arguing. I don't like getting to, being confrontational. And then something happened, I think it's about now a year and a half ago. You know what, I'm going to mention them now because they're amazing people. I saw a call out by someone. To be honest, didn't really know that Bookstagram was a thing. I just knew that they're on Instagram. There were all these women that liked books that I did. So I started following them and I didn't even know there was a hashtag. And then someone I follow put out this call like, you know, do you like Bake Off? And I'm like, yeah, I love Bake Off. You know, do you want to discuss it? So, I just put myself forward and lo and behold, what was born was a group of 9 women. Little did I know that they were all Bookstagrammers. I was the only author. So quickly, I'm going to give a shout out to Beth, Jess, Emma, Lisa, Nicole, Vicky, Hannah, and Amy. We bonded over Bake Off. And what started as that grew into this amazing group of just phenomenally supportive women that I adore them. We share everything. We've now actually finally migrated to WhatsApp, which is a big deal for us.
That is a big deal.
It is a big deal. And we're still going strong. Someone's always online. And apart from our love of Bake Off, we basically love romance. And I've learned a lot from them. And every now and again, I think I forget that actually, whoa, hold on, Caroline, you're not a Bookstagrammer. Stop pretending you are. You know, I do. I think it's Tara that kept tagging me for the Bake Off book challenge. And I got carried away until I realized, like, stop putting yourself under pressure. You're not a Bookstagrammer. And also, I can't read as fast as you lot. So, you know, I don't think I'll ever be a Bookstagrammer. But it's just simply this, honestly, the most wonderful, warm community I think I've ever seen. And genuinely, I mean, it's funny that you may maybe see the cynicism, but I just felt very welcomed. And then every now and again, I forget, oh yeah, I'm an author. So I don't know where I fit in. But for now, I'm just enjoying it. Just connecting with all these, I think I connect over Bake Off, Biscuit, my dog, the cats. You know, if I see someone's on their page, they've got these books that I love and they've got animals, then that's it, I'm sold. So
although I did make a joke about being cynical, I don't actually think it's a cynical thing. Because I personally love the relationship that like Bookstagrammers and authors are having like more and more.
Yeah. They saved the I felt so much for the debut authors in 2020 and 2021.
It must have been so stressful.
And so disappointing.
You can't go out.
So basically I think Bookstagrammers were just heroes, and it actually slightly annoys me now. You know, in the bookstores, have you seen the signs that say book talk.
Yeah,
I'm like, forget, I'm like, no. I shouldn't say forget book talk. I've done a few videos. They were all thanks to my daughter. She's now said to me, I'm sorry mum, I'm not doing any more for you. I'm like, oh okay, so forget that then. But you know, where is the stand that says Bookstagram made me buy it? Because that's how I get my recommendations now.
I think Bookstagram must just be too big to fit on the stickers, because
that's true, there'd be so many.
Like there's just I don't know, like BookTok's great, but I feel like there's more variation on Bookstagram. You go on BookTok and it's, I'm not going to like call out authors, but there are the same authors all the time. Yeah. Whereas I see so many times, like in January this year, I've seen people say, oh, I want to read books that aren't on Bookstagram. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. But there's a reason we're on Bookstagram, and that's to share it. So as long as you're then going to share these reviews of the books you're reading that you haven't seen before, because I want to know.
And you know what? What I love is when there is a book, obviously, that I haven't taken to. And I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit I do DNF, but, you know, I wouldn't say it. And, you know, everyone's entitled to that. You know, if someone doesn't like my book, I'm not going to force you, sit you down. I'd rather you just move on. There's so many other amazing books out there. But I do love it when now and again, you know, you do see bookstagrammers are honest, and that's, it's refreshing, you know, because you can't like everything. You really can't. And then when it's definitely a book that I felt the same way, I just think, there we go. So the next time you make a recommendation, I'm going to listen, because you obviously have either the same sense of humor or you like the same kind of romance, you know. Oh, and I also think buddy reads are like the best thing ever.
Yeah, I'm really bad at buddy reads. Really bad. I just either read too fast. Like, if I have a schedule to stick to, I never do. Because if I'm like in the zone, I'm reading, I'm like, well, tomorrow I might not get the chance, so I'm just going to power through. And then next thing you know, I'm like scared to spoil plot points because I've read about four chapters on. And I'm like, oh no.
Actually, my from my Bake Off book group, that they laugh sometimes, because when we do individual buddy reads, I tend to get distracted, and you know, they've already moved on. I'm like, sorry, I just got to binge this show first on Netflix, and then I'll get back to it. And they're like, oh god, here we go again. But it's great, because then they'll pull me back again, and you know, I'll just remember, no, I really want to discuss it with you, even though you've moved on to read another four books. You know, just be patient, I'll get there. So I think, because I do generally, and I think this is why I was probably a terrible reader when I was younger, because I just, it's such a lonely thing. And I kind of don't really do lonely. I do like chatting, and as you can probably tell. So the idea of a buddy read, which is like, there's just no pressure. I think with the original idea of a book club was that it's a bunch of middle class women with too much time on their hands and reading something classical, and like, you've got to have something very profound to say about it.
Like
I was with The Hearts of Visible Furies, I would just go, well, yeah, it was a great book. Can't say why I loved it. But so I think buddy reads are brilliant, because no one has to, it's all personal, like on a chat. I think it's lovely.
Yeah, I always find it quite strange when books are classed as like book club fiction. I'm like, well, any book's a book club book. Absolutely. If you read it in a book club.
Good point. Well made. Yes. Get rid of this snobbery, honestly. This is only classic, like, no way.
Yeah.
Forget that.
Well, on that note, that brings us towards the end. Yeah. And that means I've got two final questions for you. So the first one is, what would be your desert island book and breakfast?
Okay, well, I've always been very concerned about this desert island, because just the idea of being stuck on one is just really quite frightening. So I chose Anna Green Gables, possibly my all-time favourite children's book, although I think I've appreciated it more as an adult. I was just obsessed with that book, I think. That probably is my best enemies to lovers, I think, ever. And Anne is just such an incredible character. The way she romanticizes literally everything and is so grateful for everything, her wit, her humor, and again, the characterization, every single character is just phenomenal. And that idea of having a kindred spirit with Diana, that's what I've always wanted to write with friendships, you know, this idea that you have this kindred spirit. So, and I don't know if you're going to allow me the whole series. Is that cheeky? Because obviously,
because I didn't know that it was a series. So, based on that, I'm going to let you have it.
Yes, get in there. I mean, partly I only knew about the rest of the series because I was obsessed with the Canadian TV show, the adaptation. Have you ever seen that?
Joe, I've never even read Anne of Green Gables. It's on the shelf, but
I didn't know it was
enemies to lovers. So now. Okay.
Oh, but Gilbert Blythe was my first book crush. I mean, it's just nothing better. Gilbert Blythe.
I am trying to read one classic a month this year.
Yeah.
And I'm already trying to talk myself out of it, so I'm going to commit to that one.
Do you know what? You're better than I don't think I'd ever commit to that. That sounds like too much hard work.
I know, now, like, maybe one a quarter. I'll be four.
Yeah, there we go. That's better. One a quarter. I'll take that. Yeah.
And what would be your breakfast?
Well, oh, I was so lucky to live in America for 3 years. So it's the town I lived in, Montclair, New Jersey. It was a cafe called Bluestone, and I just still dream about that breakfast that I used to have there all the time. So it was scrambled egg on seeded toast with a side of Canadian bacon and a fruit pot. Oh, and of course, the best flat white ever. So, yeah.
Even you just saying that makes me want to go on holiday. I could have that in this country, but I'm like, that would be really nice if I was in America.
You'd love Montclair. It's just so beautiful. It really is. Yeah. Great cafe.
Well, that's what I look for in holiday spots. And everyone's like, what? I'm like, well, no. I don't know what I'm going to eat.
Well, exactly. It's crucial where I'm going to get that coffee. I'm not going to go elsewhere, like Starbucks. Sorry, no offense, Starbucks, but...
And who would be your three bookish dinner guests? I'm assuming this is where your book club comes into it.
Oh, you've spoiled it.
Oh, sorry. When you started saying it before, I was like, what question am I going to ask? I was like, oh.
Okay, well, then I'll go with that one first. I just had no idea. I was going to say, can you allow me a collective noun? Because it is my bake-off book group. Because do you know what? I've never met these women. And it cracks my kids up because obviously they're always telling me, you know, but you always say it's not good to have these online friendships. Yeah, but Bookstagram's different. So, you know, they think, okay, if you're sure. But yeah, we've already mapped out where we couldn't live further apart from each other. It's ridiculous. And we all age in ranges from 20 something to my age. So, you know, it's a funny group, but we do live very far away from each other. So if you'll allow me that group as a one person.
I will, because it's Bookstagram.
There we go. Yay. Okay. Now I'll go back to serious ones. My other two. So I don't know if you've heard of the author Beth Kempton. She's my absolute favorite nonfiction writer. She wrote Freedom Seeker, which I have to say had a very profound effect on my personal life. And then another book called Wabi Sabi, which I literally want to put that in everyone's hands. It's like, it's all about the Japanese wisdom of living an imperfect life perfectly. And it's just comfort in a book. It's only 200 odd pages, but it's just so beautiful. And I was so privileged to live in Japan for 4 years. So this book really, really spoke to me. There's something about Japanese culture and their wisdom. It's just, it's really calming. And I think everyone will find something from that book that they can use in their everyday life. So I definitely want to meet her. She just is incredible. Look her up on Instagram, because you'll just immediately feel soothed.
Definitely. You know,
listening to her, talking to her. So she's incredible. And then my other one, I would say, is probably my favorite escapist romantic fiction writer, and that's Isabel Broom. I absolutely love her books, and she's done 9, so she does sort of about one a year, and she just strikes me as just such a laugh. I fangirl her probably a bit too much, but I'd love to just pick her brain, like how to make writing into a career, really, you know, not just a 2-book deal. I just think she'd be great, and she's funny as well. So those are my girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like a massive group of women. And I just think, why not?
Well, that is the theme of this question. I think we had one man.
I know.
Oh, 20 you know what? Episodes.
If you weren't going to allow me my collective noun of my book, I was going to say John Boyne. So
yeah, he'd actually be at mine.
Yeah,
I'd have to like bump someone though, so I don't know who would get bumped.
Exactly. So,
well, that is the end. Thank you so much for being a guest, Caroline. I'm so excited to finally have you on.
Oh, I'm just so excited to be here.
Right, I will press stop. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Breakfast Book Club. If you've enjoyed the episode, please leave a review, as it helps other people to find the podcast. Hopefully, I will see you back here first thing Monday morning for the next episode. Bye!